Okay, Great Debates episode beginning now.
Well said.
Well said. Are we going to jump right into it? What are we doing?
Well,
wait, was there a mix up at the topic factory?
Oh, no.
We have a problem.
No.
No, I think it's a good problem.
It's not a problem per se, but like something went haywire with the topic machine.
No.
Topperoo. And it was like we ended up with only a big pile of top aboutums.
Oh no.
Oops, all top aboutums.
All right.
Let's give us something to top about. How about tops?
I'm
going to have to ask you to leave.
I was kind of bummed that we hadn't been topping about them lately.
Yeah, we forgot to do some top about.
And something must have happened. I don't know if I flipped the switch or something, but anyway, here I have a bunch of tops to top about.
Okay.
Did you reroute the Veckler before you turned it off?
It was the Veckler.
The Veckler.
I mean, everybody here knows how to speed up the top about them process. It's the Veckler.
80% of topic machine problems are the Veckler. Okay. If somebody calls me out, they're like, I got a problem with my topic machine. I'm like, don't hang up the phone, check your Veckler, call me back.
Reboot the Veckler.
Thank you.
And reroute it.
Really quickly, Medina, can you just briefly explain for the audience what a top about them?
It's not a debate per se, but we get a lot of tops to us from wonderful listeners like you. And it's a way that we can honor these tops and sort of like bring them to light with, you know, in the limited amount of time that we have.
And it probably what happened was that we got so many tops that the topic machine got jammed, and that's why we needed to reroute the Veckler.
Exactly. I think we should be sponsored by Topps, the baseball card company.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
T-O-P-P-S.
Yeah. Do you know they're in the digital universe now? They're doing all sorts of, they do the Star Wars app, I think. Why did you look at me like you just saw a ghost?
It seems like,
I think they do the Star Wars
app. Once you're doing apps and not making printed paper baseball cards, your company should dissolve.
Oh, I'm I think it's great. What are you talking about, man? Nintendo used to be like a fucking little, you know, physical game company. And then they were like, well, let's make
Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good dumbass. Thank you.
Nintendo fallacy.
Okay.
So here's a top submitted by listener Daniel G.
Okay.
Street performers are entertaining.
Well, I'll take the pro. I mean, yeah, sure. They liven up your life. You're out of the way pretty fast.
I would take the pro too. We're not debating this, right? We're just talking about it.
Yeah, we're just talking about it. There's no pro. There's no con.
Well, look, most of them are bad, right? They're on the street.
Yeah.
There's less of a filter.
Yeah.
But there is something about it where you're just like, oh, well, they're just sort of like, I wasn't expecting even a little bit of song, and it enters my life, and I know it's not going to be here for long.
Life so even on the it's streets. Not that great. A buddy of mine in high school tried to make a go of it as a street performer in Boston for a summer. And what he discovered was nobody wanted his original songs. They wanted covers.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Covers were how he got the donations
up. Hear something that they know as they pass by.
If you're busking, you better cover.
As Dave's Law.
Dave's Law. All right, let's talk about something else. Medina, what else you got there?
From listener Kevin J., carriage rides are romantic.
And he means like a carriage with horses.
Mm-hmm. If you own a carriage and you have your own horse, that could be kind of romantic. But if you're just hiring a guy and a hired horse, it's kind of gross. Like other people have been fooling around in the carriage. There's the whole issue of the horse being kind of abused. You don't know where that horse is coming from. Then you got the carriage guy. He's kind of a creepo. I say not romantic.
I think they're generally romantic, but to me, it's like it all comes down to whether the horse takes a big stinky shit or not.
Yeah, you're risking your romance on the horse's digestion.
If it does, you can't look away. It stinks, and then like you cross over the street where the shit fell. I mean, it's to watch a horse defecate is like it's horrendous.
Well,
looks like a pile of dirt coming out of. I mean, it's disgusting.
I disagree. I think it can be kind of funny, but not if you're riding behind it.
Kind of funny.
Yeah.
Do you have a view, or do they have something there?
I think you're probably
going to
be raised a tiny bit above the.
And you're moving, and it's kind of it's going to pass behind you.
Yeah.
You know, in the early 20th century, I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but in the early 20th century, like the turn of the century, the great environmental crisis of the time was the amount of horseshit in our cities. And this is totally true, there was a convention in Manhattan where they got the greatest environmental experts of the time to try to figure out how can we solve the horseshit problem in Manhattan. The streets are covered with horseshit. And it was supposed to be a 10-day conference, and after 3 days, they were like, there's no answer. We're doomed. And they went home.
Then what happened? I feel like this is one of those interesting facts that everybody knows.
No, I totally disagree. It's one of these interesting facts that you've heard me and a couple of our friends talk about a couple times because it's in one of those Freakonomics books. It's not a fact that everyone knows.
Mm. He sold a lot of those books, though.
Yeah, and so everybody knows it.
That's not true. I think it's an interesting fact. I don't think a lot of people know it.
You know what's another interesting fact that everybody knows about lobsters? Like people having to have laws about not feeding Christmas lobsters too much.
Yeah, that I agree. Is yes, they were in indentured servitude contracts.
What's another interesting fact everybody knows? Does everybody know about John Tyler, his grandchildren being alive?
I think that's a pretty popular one.
That's out there.
That's out there. I mean, I feel like the Kennedy-Lincoln things are, like, not that interesting, but everyone kind of knows them.
What's an uninteresting fact nobody knows?
I mean, what?
Let's get another talk.
Okay.
How would you even... You mean literally nobody knows?
Yeah. Well, like, my dad's middle name is James. That's an uninteresting fact almost nobody knows.
Oh, almost nobody. Well, you changed it. Mm-hmm. I'm also
now everyone knows.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, I think that's kind of interesting. I'm not joking. What's his first name again?
Charles James.
God, that's a good solid name.
Is
a
nice, solid name. The third
has a nice ring to it.
Your middle name is Charles.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Is that a common thing? How common is that dads give their sons their first name as their son's middle name?
I don't know. I can't imagine giving my son the middle name Steve.
Well, Steven, surely.
Steven. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
But our friend Craig, I know our friend Craig, his father is Anthony. His middle name is Anthony. Is this a Boston thing or like
maybe it's a Boston thing or a Catholic thing or whatever.
Okay.
It's not part of my West African, that part of my heritage.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about something else.
Here's one from listener Brandon A. You should go to the county fair.
Love this top. Think this is great. I love to go to the LA County Fair, and I'm always a little disappointed with myself when I don't manage to get over there. At the LA County Fair, they have a competition for table settings.
Ooh.
They have an enormous cows. They have,
yeah.
You know, they've always got some new level of deep fried disgustingness. Mm-hmm.
What is like the different? I'm not that well versed in the fair as a phenomenon. I've been to a few.
Mm-hmm.
How different is a county fair from a state fair?
Well, I think in some states the state fair is the big one.
Yeah,
in California. I don't. If we have a state fair, it probably happens up in Sacramento or someplace. Mm-hmm. Dan, do you know about the California
maybe at the fair? Expo Center or something like that? Yeah, I have never been to the state fair.
I went to the state fair in Maine in like 1994.
Okay.
And it was one of the most frightening things I'd ever seen in my life.
How so?
Well, it was basically like, I was going to summer camp there. What's that?
Frightening.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
First of all, there was Nazi paraphernalia for sale. And I was like, holy shit. That's okay. Okay. That's weird. And also,
how old were you?
I was like 15. Must be 93. I was 15. Yeah.
Okay. It was like people selling World War II relics.
Exactly. Yeah. But okay. it was literally a thing where a guy was like, "Yeah, we have all this old war, like American Army stuff." And then he like opened a panel of his table or something like that, and he was like, "Hi-yo!"
Did he say "Hi-yo"?
He did not.
Okay.
He said, like, if you want to see, you know, I also have
the real deal.
If you want to see, this is, you know, part of history as well. And I have he's like, "Oh, well, I'm gonna walk away." And the other thing was that there were like they were, I don't, the people, there were people there who, oh, this is weird. They were on horse-drawn carriages. People arrived to the fair in horse-drawn carriages. I don't know if they were local, like Mennonites or Amish or something like that, but it was like, but they weren't, they didn't seem to be dressed in traditional garb.
Have the any Nazi stuff.
Yes. Well, they did. If you had been that guy, you would have been in luck because there was tons of Nazi stuff.
Do you think they should be allowed to, like, eBay doesn't let you sell Nazi stuff.
No, probably not.
Should, like, you're...
Isn't there a sort of a dark web section of eBay, though?
There's like, got
to
be.
There's a section that you, if you sign up for a special like login, then you can go to the bad stuff.
Really?
I think so.
The bad stuff?
What's I think there's like a dark side
bad of eBay. Bad boy eBay.
Daddy want.
We used to go to the Dixon May Fair, which Dixon is a town, you know, maybe 10 or 15 miles from Winters, also a farm town.
This is Northern California.
Up in Northern California where I grew up. And it was just like a, you know, local fair like any other. They had the carnival rides. You could ride on a pony if you were a kid like I was. At the Dixon May Fair, they had these cinnamon rolls. And, you know, we would go in the evening and it would get to be nighttime and then it was time to line up for a cinnamon roll. I've never eaten a cinnamon roll at night at a time other than this. To this day, I have not had a better cinnamon roll than the ones that they made at the Dixon May Fair.
That sounds so nice.
Is, I mean, amazing.
Should cinnamon rolls be a nighttime food? What are we doing having them in the morning?
It's amazing to me that Cinnabon kind of like blew it for everybody with this whole cinnamon roll thing, because if there was like a hipster cinnamon roll joint here in Los Angeles, I would go there at night. Just, I mean, and maybe it's just me, but dude,
that was so evocative.
That was cool.
It was like something out of like a Stephen Milhauser story or something.
It's going to happen now.
Childhood, the cinnamon. Ah, what is it? I mean, we know what it is, but like those tastes and smells from here, like it made me think about the apple cider donuts you could get when you went apple picking in, I think, Stowe or Acton, Massachusetts, where I used to go. Nothing like it. Oh, my God, the smell.
Is Cinnabon net good or bad for the United States?
Oh, it's bad.
It's bad, I think.
Yeah.
But I disagree. I think you're at the airport, you're having a tough time, your flight's delayed, you need something. Get yourself a Cinnabon.
What most people are going to Cinnabon for. It's not like, ugh, I guess like I got nothing else to eat.
Give myself a little treat Healy, to get through the day. The airport can be such a drag.
Healy, it's a place that fatties go in the mall. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm. It tastes pretty good, though.
I include myself in that group. But I don't think I've ever been. Okay, let's talk about... Oh, Medina's got something on his mind here.
I'm just thinking about that cinnamon roll.
Oh,
what time of year is the Dixon May Fair?
Oh, May, I think.
It's in May. The May Fair.
I think it's in May.
You ever go to the Topsfield Fair in Massachusetts, Dave?
No.
You've never been to the Topsfield Fair?
Was it nice?
Oh, it's so great. Yeah, they have that's always where they have the pretty much every year they break the record for the biggest pumpkin in the world.
Oh, cool.
They're getting up to like, I don't know, 1,200, 1,400 pounds on these things. And they're just freaks. They don't have any pumpkin shape anymore.
Right.
It's just like disgusting, crawling, oozing monster of pumpkin.
If we tried to verify the statement that almost every year they break the world record, how accurate do you think it would turn out to be?
I'd put a dollar on that.
Okay.
I bet the current pumpkin record is held by Topsfield.
All right.
Listeners, please help us settle this $1 bet.
I might start looking this up while we do get a little deeper to talk about.
Okay, here's another one from listener Donnie M. Being bald is a disadvantage.
I agree. I would take the pro. It's not a huge one, but it is.
You can make it work for you, but you're going to have to make it work for you. Mm-hmm. Like, having a nice full head of hair is good. All the newscasters and politicians have that. Mm-hmm. Who's the most successful bald guy in America?
Oh, great question. The nominees are... Scott Van Pelt? I don't know.
Okay.
I can't think of a lot of
bald... The guy from The Strain, Corey Stoll?
There's got to be... Vin Diesel.
Mr. Diesel.
Vin Diesel so far.
Oh, Vin. Vin D.
Vin Diesel. Yeah, some actors.
By the way, the world's heaviest pumpkin, 2,100 pounds from Germany. So
wow.
Please, let's not mislead our listeners in the future.
Hey, sorry, guys.
Any other nominees for America's Most Successful Bald person?
Patrick Stewart.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
That's good.
Not American, though.
He's not American. There are some very famous and successful non-American bald guys.
Ving Rhames?
Ooh.
Is he bald? There must be some like really famous baby.
Who's America's most famous baby right now?
Ah, that's a great question.
Okay, let's continue. There's a pile. I'm telling you, the machine.
Sorry.
Just, there's a huge pile of them.
I know. We got to get through these.
Okay, this is a Heely top. Lewis and Clark were best friends.
I mean, it's an adorable top. What do you know about this?
Well,
Heely?
They were stuck together on a road trip for a really long time with only, you know, there were some other people in the core of Discovery, but they were pretty, like, tight, you know? Like, I imagine they had to at least have some kind of working relationship.
Some people say Lewis and Clark were America's first road bros.
Yeah. You know, Lewis committed suicide.
I didn't know that. God,
yeah, he kind of, like, went into a dark place and killed himself. He was having some tough depression.
Was he on the road or was he back off the road?
They'd finished the trip and whatever. They were done.
Wait, did he do it at the end of the trip or did he like
some years after, I believe. Okay. Yeah. They had another friend on the trip to Sacagawea. Uh-huh. Sacagawea.
Sacagawea. You have like 30 different pronunciations.
No, it's always Sacagawea.
Yeah. Has she come up before in this podcast?
Yeah.
So, come
on. Yeah, what about her?
I don't know. Just maybe she was.
Oh, you maybe just wanted to say something. You just want to say her name, maybe.
Maybe they were best friends.
I think that's unlikely.
Clark and Sacagawea and Lewis were best friends. Like, could they have all been best friends together?
Together, they were besties.
No, but didn't she speak through a translator? Or she was?
Yeah, she was married to a guy who John came Smith? Along as well. No, was, he was named Charbonneau.
Did each of them think that they had a better relationship with her than they did with each other?
That's a great question.
There was a lot of talking about the other one behind the back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did she pretend to be the best friend of the other one?
She probably was getting in their head somehow.
Can I just tell you one thing, Sacagawea, about Lewis?
Mm-hmm.
Just the one thing that really annoys me about him is like when we're writing up our notes.
Was that your impression of the Vanessa Bayer?
I bailed out on it because I realized it was exactly that.
Yes. Let's talk about him.
Okay. Chris A submits the following top. At least one Supreme Court justice can name a Jay-Z song.
Hmm. Oh, I think so.
You think John Roberts could name 99 Problems?
I don't know if it's John Roberts. I bet Sotomayor knows what's up.
Oh, Sotomayor.
Sotomayor knows Sotomayor what's up. She's from New York, right?
Yeah. She's got it.
Is Empire from, State of Mind.
Yeah.
That's where she's the from the Bronx or someplace, or
yeah.
Yeah, I think 99 Problems is probably.
And she's always setting up her clerks and stuff. She's kind of hip.
What is Sotomayor's favorite Jay-Z song?
Let's ask her. If anybody out there clerks for Sotomayor.
But you know what? Believe it or not, it's Sunshine.
Hmm.
It's like the early one. Not that early, but Hype Williams era, oddly. That's what she's into.
Okay, here's one.
I can't go a day without my sunshine.
This is from Twitter user at CL Burke. Okay, this is a mouthful, but I'm going to do my best. Tim Allen's Home Improvement could bring you to tears at least 14 times. Tim Allen's Home Improvement.
Which Home Improvement you're talking about.
Could bring you to tears at least 14 times.
Okay, so how many there were a ton of episodes, right?
Must be 150 or something.
That show, I remember, it was never my favorite show because it wasn't the funniest show, but it was quite emotional. Like, and there was some really good acting on it. Patricia Richardson was a really great mom. And there were some pretty intense plots about the boys being kind of wild, and one of the boys was like a little less manly than the other guys. There was a lot of good father-son stuff. And then at the end, they would always have this kind of wrap-up period where Tim would really like realize he'd learned something or another from talking to Mr. Wilson, and then he'd talk to the guy with the beard. And sometimes the guy with the beard would have a relationship problem that was like kind of emotional. I bet that show could get you to tears.
Boy, I don't know. First of all, 204 episodes, pretty impressive.
If you slog through all 204 episodes like in a row, you would get to an emotional broken down
place.
You might
cry. Yeah, I mean, I think your life
is... So that's seven or eight cries right there. Yeah.
The number 14 is a hard one to hit.
That's a lot.
14's a lot of cries.
Well, basically one out of every, 15 episodes roughly has to make you cry. That's tough. I will say that what was the guy with the beard? What was his name? Al?
Al, yeah.
Played by Richard Karn or Kind? Richard Karn, right?
Yeah, Richard Kind was Mad About You.
Yeah, yeah. I always found him to be the most sympathetic character, and the relationship between Tim and Al.
Yeah.
There was something about the way that Tim always made fun of Al, but yeah. Then when there was some sweetness there. I mean, I didn't love the show.
Well, Al would throw it back, so it wasn't
I think if I were going to cry, it might be about that. I don't think I would cry. I think I could watch all 204 episodes and not cry once.
I think most of your cries are going to come from Patricia Richardson moments.
Something would have to be going on in your life. When was the last time you watched a multicam sitcom and cried? That's never happened to me. Cried? I mean, obviously tears of laughter count, but that's not going to happen. All right. I don't think so. I take the con. Could, 14. I guess it's an interesting word, could bring you to tears.
Great top.
It's a top.
It's a good top.
Yeah.
It's a well-worded top, that's for sure. Here's one. I got another one. Listener Matt B. Taco Bell is Mexican food.
Hmm. Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, is it not because it's Tex-Mex food?
Is it even Tex-Mex food?
Is it even food?
Okay, well, it is based on... Most of it is based on wrapping a tortilla around something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to say it's Mexican food. It's not authentic. It's not, a street stand in Jalisco, but it's brother. Mexican food.
Where?
Jalisco.
I mean, the double decker taco supreme is a Mexican specialty.
If you can only get one item from Taco Bell, what do you get?
Mm. Well, can I get as many of the item as I want?
Sure.
Because I like to get just the crunchy tacos.
Okay. Oh, those are good.
Are you not going to get a Doritos Locos Taco?
I don't care for all the...
You're an idiot.
The Doritoification of Taco Bell, I actually don't care for. That's too much flavor.
First of all, no one... You're making this up. There's only two items that are marriage of Doritos and Taco Bell. And it's the crunchy taco. It's just three different flavors or two flavors of the... crunchy taco.
We may have discussed this before, but Taco Bell was founded by a guy named Bell.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that.
That's wild. So, not a Mexican, I don't think.
Probably not. Couple more.
Yeah.
Michael G. submits, water has no flavor.
I think that's true by definition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with Michael G.
Could you make a water-flavored cake? What?
No.
That's kind of the question, right?
It would be...
Or a water-flavored Jolly Rancher.
It would have less taste than the blandest pound cake you've ever had.
Could I
Way
give,
less.
Could
we
I give
no
you
taste.
A flavor strip that you lick it and it's water flavor?
Do you ever taste the differences between bottled waters that you choose at the convenience store or whatever?
I think I'm down on Dasani.
Mm.
And what's the Pepsi version? Aquafina or whatever?
Aquafina,
I don't know, man. That is such a sham. Bottled water is crazy that people purchase bottled water.
No, it's not. You need water. It comes
crazy.
When you choose, Davis, obviously you just choose the cheapest one.
Not necessarily. I mean, I'll get sometimes Esther wants a particular one and I'll mm-hmm. just get two of those or whatever. But tap water is fine.
It's fine, yeah.
Drink it.
Yeah, but you're buying bottled water because you're out and about and you need some water that you can carry in your hand. You're paying for the bottle, not the water.
So how do you make your choice?
I actually believe, Healy, that for most people who purchase bottled water, that is not the case. I believe that our... basically our soft drink industry has convinced America that they need to drink bottled water. That is better for you.
Yeah, I mean, bottled water outsells every other soft drink now, right?
There you go. It comes out of your tap. It's like if every house in America had a tap that also gave you Coca-Cola, But people still went to the still bought Coca-Cola way more than they drank it out of their tap.
I think it would have to be that like Shasta Cola came out of the tap.
Okay.
But it's the story, you could buy a Coke or Pepsi.
Okay, wait. If Shasta Cola came out of a tap in your house, how often would you buy Coke?
I might still buy some Coke every
time. So there you go. I would.
Yeah, I don't think that's an apt analogy. I think it's, I don't know. I think Coke is way superior.
Well, I would rather drink a Perrier sometimes than I would a glass of tap water.
No, but here's the thing. It would be like if Shasta came out of your tap, but also people were like advertised to and persuaded to think that Shasta was bad for you. Well, that's a bad example. Shasta is bad. They're both bad for you. But that, like,
where are you seeing the advertising that's convincing people that tap water is bad? Like, I don't deny that happens, but I've never seen any ad or I think people. Okay, I actually don't think it's
fair.
We can't blame it on Coke. I think it's just people have worked themselves up into thinking tap water.
Oh, you absolutely can blame it on not necessarily Coke, but the, you know, huge corporations that own the companies that.
But Healy's point is like, how did we get this idea?
So that's fair, but I would say that it is, you're right in that it's not specifically saying tap water.
Also, by the way, we live in a great water town. Our tap water's pretty good, and we're lucky to live in places where the pipes are pretty good. I think a lot of people, their tap water might taste kind of nasty.
Flint, Michigan.
Okay, that's an But here's what I would say to the point about, like, where do you see these places are saying tap water is bad? I would say that there's more so advertising that extols the virtues of the healthiness of the bottled water, which is designed to make you think that it is better and healthier than tap water, and also the sort of, like, bragging about the source of the bottled water. If it weren't a health thing, if it were a convenience thing, those things would be irrelevant. And bottled water would not be advertised in a way that represents, like, health. And, by the way, like, weight loss even. I mean, smart water is designed. Like, the whole campaign of that is you're subliminally being told that smart water helps you look good. More so than tap water. That's the implication. Would you not agree with that? You're right in that no one is saying don't drink tap water specifically, but I also bet if you dug deep enough, I bet you could find ways in which Coca-Cola and like the Pepsi Company and whatever are attacking tap water as like unhealthy or like promoting studies that show that, you know, tap water is worse than it is.
I'd be interested how much bottled water is drunk in your home versus like, you're paying for bottled water because you're out and about and you need to get some water.
Really, people stock their refrigerators with bottled water. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the time. Mm-hmm. You go to a house, you open a person's refrigerator, it usually has bottled water in it.
It seems like a nicer thing to give someone than a glass of water. And it's only because it exists. It's like,
yeah, I'd
if bottled water wasn't there, then we'd all be perfectly happy with a glass of water.
That's true. Okay, what else?
Last one.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Listener Carl B. Everyone should memorize at least one poem.
Yeah, pro.
Well, I have a backdoor pro.
A BDP? Okay, what?
That it's like you... excuse me. It's basically like if you haven't memorized at least one poem, you are like not a functional human being to the extent that the Alphabet Song and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star are poems.
Okay.
You should have. Hey, man, get off my back.
Those are songs.
I told you it was a backdoor poem.
They aren't poems. They're songs.
One of the most popular ways to memorize poems is by putting them to music. This is a way that our brain, when you associate things with other things, your brain has an easier time remembering it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the tools people use to memorize poems. It's not a coincidence that some of the most basic poems have been put to song. And you should memorize the Alphabet Song, which is a poem, or Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, which is a poem, or else you're in trouble.
The Alphabet Song is not a poem. It's all of the letters in the alphabet in order.
No, it's got parts after that.
Now okay. I know my ABCs.
Now I know my ABCs.
Next time
I got a story about memorizing a poem.
It's a haiku.
Sixth grade, Pollard Middle School, right? Uh-huh, we went to the same middle school. And everybody had to memorize a poem. But the way that you got to, and the poems were all from one book, and the way that there was like a draft of picking the poems. And the draft was somehow you got like, somehow I was like had first pick in the draft. And I picked it. Duh, I picked like the shortest, easiest poem.
Well, that seemed unlike you, yeah. Actually.
Well, then the twist. After class, the teacher was like, you know, I'm a little disappointed in you.
Mm. I love this.
I think you should have picked a more challenging poem.
It. Yeah.
And I felt kind of bad, and I was like, okay, and I took on a much more challenging poem.
Do you remember the poem?
Yeah, it was If by Rudyard Kipling.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you can 60 minutes run.
Who is that teacher?
I think it was Miss Rich. Was that a teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Miss Rich.
Well, wait. Yeah. Well, she was a social studies teacher.
Yeah, but she was also my homeroom teacher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've told the Yo, Mrs. Rich, you got big titty story already. Yeah,
that was cool.
Same Mrs. Rich comes up again.
Yeah, she's a character in the podcast. Dan, do you know any poems?
I know one poem that's by Keats.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
On first looking into Chapman's Homer.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to know it really well. I don't know it very well anymore. I think I always kind of mess it up. What I was wondering is, where do you put the line breaks in the alphabet song poem, Davis?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, line break. H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, line break. Q, R, S. Arguably, Q, R, S, line break, yes. T, U, V, line yes. break, W, X, Y, and Z.
No, you're right about that. It's yeah. obvious.
I was reading a book one time by a literary kind of guy who's musing and having essays, and he paused in his discussion to talk about what he considered to be a truly great poem,
mm-hmm.
which I guess this was a popular poem of the 1950s. May I recite it for you?
Oh, yes, no.
By all means.
Yeah.
Carnation milk, the best in the land. I have a can of it here in my hand. No teat to pull, no hay to pitch. You punch a hole in the son of a bitch.
That's fantastic.
That's a good little poem, right?
An American poem.
It's all right. Yeah, it's very American.
Yeah.
Well, guys. All
right. Top to bottom.
That's what happens when we have a problem with the topic machine.
I hope we get it fixed by next week.
It's easy to fix. Reroute the Veckler.
We're going to reroute the Veckler, and it's all going to be fine. We might have to clean it out a little bit.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to get in there with a router and just...
Listeners, thank you so much for submitting all these wonderful tops. As you can tell, they bring us a lot of enjoyment. Continue to please write to us at greatdebates69@gmail.com. Tweet at us. We're at Great Debates. We hope you follow us on Instagram.
For at greatdebates69.
Mm-hmm. And we are so thankful that you tune in and listen to our podcast. And we'll see you next week. The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. Our audio engineer is Mackenzie Kellerman. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King. And the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.